Welcome to the How to Buy or Sell a Business Successfully podcast. The concepts discussed in this podcast are for informational purposes only. No attorney-client relationship is intended or formed by this podcast. No legal advice is intended in the substance of this podcast. Feel free to check out our website, www.goforemanlaw.com. Enjoy the show and welcome your hosts, Jake Wayman and Sam Foreman. Welcome back to How to Buy and Sell a Business Successfully podcast. Today, we're talking about buying a medical or a dental practice, so looking at kind of acquiring the whole practice itself. And we're really lucky to be joined again by Jennifer Allen, who's the head of the healthcare practice group at Adams Brown, and also by CJ Morowitz at Emprise Bank, who has been active in healthcare financing transactions. And I believe you're also the head of that department at Emprise. Yeah. Well, welcome back. And we're also joined by our co-host today, Jacob Wayman. So.
Hey guys, sorry I'm late.
We're just glad to have you here. So let's kind of talk a little bit about, when you're looking at these transactions, Jennifer, from a tax perspective, and you've got a client that's looking at acquiring an entire practice, and you know maybe it is somebody that has an existing practice and they're buying a practice, or maybe they're just, you know, somebody that's looking to buy out somebody who's going to retire or some other kind of structure. What are some of the tax things or some of the accounting things that you really want your clients to look at as they're getting ready for those deals?
Really, the first thing that we understand is, are they setting up a new business or is this going to be a second location for their existing practice? You know, do we have to set up new EINs to work with not only the insurance piece, or is it just a additional location? But then understanding if they're buying the assets, that's always the best, as always a recommendation for a buyer, is to buy assets rather than the stock because of the tax benefits. And then really the question is, how much can we associate to either a supplies, inventory, if it's like a veterinary practice, or dental supplies, things like that, or equipment? And how much is Blue Sky or Goodwill patient list? And so really understanding the benefits, we can depreciate things much faster if it's associated to a supply, a inventory type item, or if it is a equipment, than if it is Blue Sky. And so the tax implications for buying it, as a buyer, we want most of it to equipment or supplies rather than the Blue Sky, whereas the seller's going to have the pull and want more to the Blue Sky or client list.
Sure.
Goodwill.
And when folks are looking at this, you know, what kind of dollars are we talking about in terms of, you know, how much of a difference it can make if things are, you know, allocated in a way that they can be depreciated, or if you're, you know, doing a stock deal and everything's already been fully depreciated or expensed out on equipment, for example. And I realize it's going to vary based on the actual dollars involved, but how important should folks, you know, treat something like this?
I mean, these can be some significant dollars. Anything that you can put to equipment versus the goodwill can typically be depreciated either in the first year or a significant portion of it in the first year or up to the first 5 years versus 15. And so when you're talking, you know, couple hundred thousand dollars for the goodwill portion or the client list portion, and then you're not able to expense that until fully until year 15. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty big difference. And so really understanding what that difference looks like for the first year, when maybe it's the we can reduce some tax bills.
No, that's helpful. That's helpful. CJ, when you're working with folks who are looking at buying a practice, what does that loan process look like? What are some things that people really need to be thinking about when it comes to, you know, making sure that they're ready for that process and how long it might take and kind of what they need to bring to the table to make it a successful loan process?
You know, they always have a lot of questions around what's needed, and generally we
we require, you know, 3 years personal tax returns, personal financial statement, and then the financials on the business that they're looking at, whether that's tax returns or end of year financial statements for the last 2 or 3 years, just so we have a clear picture of the cash flow and be able to deliver to them, you know, what that looks like on paper. Outside of that, once we get past that stage, having an idea of what the number is, you know, the valuation, what that number really looks like, how much they're going to need. And then, you know, sometimes they have to put a little extra in to buy the AR, because day one, generally the account's going to sit at zero. And, you know, how do they need to look at how much money they need, for payroll, you know, when that rolls around in the next 30 days. So just evaluating what their needs are out of the gate. But I would say, you know, just taking time to think about it, probably a few months, to really dive into it, working with your team and understanding what the full deal really looks like.
Well, and kind of on that note, for buyers that have been working in the practice or even not working in the practice, what sort of diligence should they be thinking about when they're going in the process? I mean, the questions for both of you is, you know, because you have a seller on one side who wants to sell the business, but a buyer wants to buy. So what's the diligence look like for the buyer and the seller?
Sure. I mean, I guess I can talk first, Jen. I always tell them to look at kind of the patient demographics. If you're new to the practice, if you're coming into it new and you start, you know, what are the demographics? You know, aging docs, maybe they've been practicing for 30 plus years. They haven't really focused on new patients in a while. So what does that really look like? Is it an aging patient base? You know, that kind of plays into how much work the new doc is going to have to take into marketing, you know, out of the gate, to kind of bolster the new patient leads. Equipment age is another big thing. You know, sometimes they'll buy a bunch of new equipment to kind of revamp the practice, if you will, because a lot of the younger docs are working, you know, straight out of school with the best technology possible, to where they may be going into a practice that doesn't have any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So they've got to think about, you know, expenditures coming up to be able to continue to practice the way they have been, whether that's in school or maybe an updated practice elsewhere. Employee costs are another thing that I see. Maybe they get the valuation back and maybe the employees have been getting paid, you know, really well, because they've been there maybe a really long time and the varying costs of that these days. And then just the existing debt that maybe the practice owner has, that's always a factor. If they've got a bunch of debt out there, maybe, you know, it's a talking point. But is that going to be relinquished? And if the practice sells for a certain amount, will it still be enough to pay off those debts? That kind of stuff. So there's quite a bit to it.
No, that's helpful. That's helpful. How about you, Jennifer?
I think really just understanding, you know, CJ talked about, you know, patient demographic, but also just because a current practice owner accepts insurance, is that something that they want to keep doing? Do they want to accept different insurances? You know, what is that going to do if we say, hey, I'm not going to accept this major provider? What does that actually cut into? Sometimes I've seen practices that have accepted every insurance under the sun. And then when you get down to it, they cut, you know, 5 or 6 or something, and it cuts maybe 100 patients. It really has no impact on, you know, the cash flow coming in, but yet it's a little bit less of a headache for some of the team. And so really just kind of understanding what policies do they want to potentially change and what are they going to keep up? Because you don't want to walk in the door and just say, I'm now the owner and I'm going to completely change all of this process. It's going to be heartbreaking for some of the employees who have been with that selling owner for quite a while. Some of it can be good, some of it can be bad, whether or not it shakes up the office a little bit. So really understanding what makes sense and what kind of sword do they need to fall on and which ones are kind of deal breakers for them.
No, that's really helpful advice. What kind of issues do you see or ways that people set themselves up for success when they're buying a practice and maybe the retiring doc, for example, is staying on to work in the practice for a little while? Where do you see folks have kind of successful relationships in that process? And where do you see them kind of run into challenges as they're, you know, structuring those relationships?
I think understanding the balance of, you know, does that selling provider want to stay in the everyday, or do they really want to come in, see a patient and then turn around and leave? Or are they going to be one that struggles a little bit with that transition, because everybody's personality is going to be different. Some of them will say, oh, I'm washing my hands of this. And some of them will have a little bit harder time washing their hands of being that decision maker if they're in there. And so really trying to understand what everybody's motivation is.
Yeah. Making sure you know if you're the buyer, whether or not the seller wants to continue to run their business.
Yes. Yes. Even though you're the owner. Yeah.
Are they going to show up and still try to be your boss now that you, yeah. No, that's great. How about you, CJ?
Yeah, that makes complete sense. Just making sure everyone's on the same page, you know, even outside of that. I mean, pay is always, you know, a discussion of employment contract after, and making sure everyone's happy with that, and how many days they're going to come in, and whether they're ratcheting down and how quickly that may be, because maybe they're thinking, oh yeah, I can stay involved for 4 days a week, and then a couple months go by and maybe they're like, maybe one into 2 days a week maybe sounds better for me. But yeah, you know, obviously you get that dialed in with an employment contract, and just making sure everyone's on the same page.
Do you find success when practices have that relationship to where the seller stays involved for a few months after, or maybe a year after, or is it clean cut, or is the better way to go?
From the banking side, we feel like if the selling doc is going to stay on for a little while, it gives us a little bit more comfort knowing that the transition of patients, you know, a kind handoff to, you know, Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so is coming in today. This is, you know, this is my doctor that will be taking over for me as I transition and retire. And, you know, it's, and then also for maybe more complicated cases, that they can pull in the more experienced, not necessarily more experienced, but, older doc that has seen a lot of things over the years, and they can step in and help out when times arise. So.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great.
Really just kind of understanding, you know, especially if this is adding a second practice and you're kind of ramping up and figuring out what that balance is, or if this is going to be your sole practice that you're working in. And so are you going to be there every day, or do you maybe need that experienced provider to be the eyes and ears and make sure that, you know, the staff has what they need and they're not looking, well, I can't do anything because my provider is gone right now. And so really understanding what that mix is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if it's clean cut, you really look to the longtime manager that's been there and making sure he or she will be there after the transition to help with those decisions. That's a key piece in that.
Yeah, no, that's really helpful. I mean, when we are working with folks on deals, we really want to make sure that people understand where is the value, how does the business that you're buying create value, and then how do you figure out how to transfer that. And so, you know, taking all of those components that you've talked about, whether it's the relationships with patients, whether it's the, you know, mix of insurance providers, et cetera, and making sure that you really understand how that all works together to create value. And then what are the pieces that you need to put together to make sure that the value you're paying for, you know, makes the jump over to the buyer's side of the ledger. Yeah. So, well, hey, real quick, rapid fire. What's your best piece of advice, Jennifer and CJ? What is your best piece of advice for folks that want to have a successful deal process buying a healthcare practice?
Go ahead. CJ, you want to go first?
Sure.
Okay. For me, I would say understand whether or not you have the taste to take on the real estate at the same time. I see a lot of times where real estate is purchased at the same time of the practice, but it doesn't always have to. So know that you can structure deals where there's a first right of refusal or something like that, that allows you to be almost guaranteed that building, but you don't have to write the check immediately if you're not really ready. If the practice can't quite support it, maybe for the first few years.
That's great. CJ?
I would say I always go back to having the right team in place and, you know, having what Jennifer said as part of one of your teammates, but also on the banking side, just making sure everyone's in the know, kind of like going back, I think, to the first podcast viewing, or not viewing, but the first podcast we talked about, going back to W-2 employee, you know, are you looking to transition into a new house? Are you new to the area? Do you need to buy a house? If that's the case, you need to buy it generally before you mm-hmm. take on a business, because now you're going to need 2 years of tax returns to qualify. Mm-hmm. So thinking about those things and having your team on deck at all times and having the right team in place helps and makes the transition a lot smoother.
It's funny. Buying a medical practice and buying a normal business, I don't know if that's a key word. They're very much alike.
Good stuff.
For sure.
Well, thank you, everybody. Those are great advice for our listeners, of which there are many, not all of which are my mother. but thank you all for joining us. And thank you, CJ. Thank you, Jennifer, for your wise advice for our listeners. And everybody have a wonderful day. And please follow, like, subscribe. If you want to leave us a 1-star review, we do ask that you leave us really, really colorful comments, because that's the only way I enjoy them. So, all right. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day. Thank you for joining us today. For future episodes, please subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And please check out our website at www.goforemanlaw/learning.